it verbal, you like non-verbal. It's now become something with that. Your problems, my problem, my problems, my problem. You telling me this ain't a problem?
So annoying.
I solve them, I solve them, I solve them, I solve them. And every time this ain't your problem. We ain't need to win it, I'm with it. I meant it's a minute, but it's been a minute. We should admit it, that maybe the thing is we could be a bit more committed. What is the 411? What is the 411? What is the 411? You're acting up and then you say none. What is the 411? What is the 411? What is the 411? You act this weird and then you say none.
Hold up, baby, oh, baby, oh. Why you acting so, so crazy, oh? Yeah. And I got time for nonsense. If you wanna get down, then let's play. And you know, see, I don't like. Cause you're my baby, you're my miss.
Boy, I hold up, wait a minute. Pull up, pull up. If you're with it, hey, I'm lit, I'm lit. Back up, Miss Beef. Girl, I wind up your waist. No one make you stiff, y'all.
Hello, and welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Serena. Today is Wednesday, May 15th. Wow. And you are listening to The Arts Report. I have a couple of lovely guests in the studio today if you guys want to introduce yourselves.
Hello, I'm Mickey, a returning guest.
Yes.
Yes. Hello, I'm Maya, also a returning guest.
And I'm so happy to have you guys here. But before we go any further, I do want to just reiterate that we are broadcasting to you live from University of British Columbia Vancouver campus, which is unceded and stolen Musqueam territory. Indigenous voices in so-called Canada have been systematically devalued and diminished, and this cannot go unacknowledged in broadcast media such as radio. To hear more, please listen to Unceded Airwaves from CITR's Indigenous Collective. So with that said, today we're going to be talking about alternative literature, which is super awesome. But first, I wanted to ask you, Maya, yes. As our resident zine administrator and Substack aficionado,
yay!
What are you listening to? Do you have any recommendations for us today?
You know me, I love a cherry pie, mm-hmm. And I love Cherry Pie by Sade.
Okay, so to intro us, you guys are going to be listening to Cherry Pie by Sade.
Got to find what I'm meant to do.
Kalalalalam is an urban indigenous health and wellness cooperative in Vancouver's downtown east side. Taking a decolonized approach to healthcare, Kalalalalam aims to partner indigenous elders with physicians and allied health professionals to provide culturally informed physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual care to our community members. You can join us in helping to decolonize healthcare and supporting members of the downtown east side by sharing our story or providing single, monthly, or annual donations. Head over to our website, kalalalalam.ca, or Instagram at kilalalelum to learn more or donate.
The annual Sled Island Music and Arts Festival is back June 19th to 23rd. Experience 5 days of music, comedy, film, and art in diverse venues across Calgary, Alberta. Featuring New York experimental hardcore trio Show Me the Body as guest curator, incisive Chicago rapper Mick Jenkins, Los Angeles indie rockers Cherry Glazer, Canadian indie rock sensation Ecstasy, genre-bending rap artist Carrie Foe, Montreal-based hip-hop trio Planet Giza, 70s Zamrock revivalist with trailblazing Argentine singer-songwriter Juana Molina, and many, many more. Plus, there's over 150 more artists in the full lineup. Check out the full lineup and get your passes and tickets at sledisland.com. Repeat, sledisland.com.
Hello and welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to The Arts Report. My name is Serena and I'm joined in the studio by the lovely, lovely Mickey and Maya.
Yay!
And we want to give a little shout out to our dear friend, Cammy.
Yay, Cammy!
Woo! So with Yay, Cammy said, we're getting into our episode here about alternative literature. So the definition of alternative literature, according to Wikipedia, of course, is essentially a type of literature that's highly influenced by internet culture and online publishing. And there's a new definition for it that people, or sorry, not a new definition, a new term that people are using for it called new sincerity. And I really like that term, actually, because I feel like the idea of like alternative literature makes you kind of think more of like, oh, like sci-fi or like outside of the box thinking. And it's not necessarily talking about like a difference in genre. It's more talking about a difference in like how it's being published or like, I guess, overall themes that could be found in different genres that are being talked about. And there's a lot of focus on like a few specific authors, and those are debated, so I won't, you know, die on a hill about who those specific authors are. But a lot of people who are very heavily influenced by internet culture. So that's kind of interesting. I believe that the term was first used in 2011 on a Tumblr and Twitter post or group called Alt-Lit Gossip. Maya, did you hear about this too?
Yeah, I read the exact same.
The exact same Wikipedia page.
And I think it's so interesting because I feel like Tumblr especially has kind of like transcended, like it's gone through so many like phases. Like I remember being 10, 11, Tumblr this, Tumblr that. And I feel like now, not that it's like died off, but I feel like the talk
about it's like
has
a time capsule.
It feels like whenever I think of Tumblr, I think 2014, 2015.
No, Wattpad.
Wattpad, exactly.
Wattpad walked so Substack could run.
Literally, let's talk about it. But also at the same time, I feel like Tumblr, as much as we like to like joke about it and like tease it a bit, like it has genuinely made like a lot of like impact, especially on like how we like write and culture and all these things. And I think it's like genuinely like so interesting.
No, I super agree. Yeah, I think Tumblr is like, it's really interesting to see how Tumblr lives on through like screenshotted Twitter, screenshotted like
literally
Instagram posts. Like the inception of Tumblr. But at its core, it's all Tumblr. Like I feel like it did kind of pave the way for like a certain style of writing that's like very direct, very honest, and very just like,
yes,
like blunt almost. And I find that like, I think even popular writers right now are taking inspiration from that. Like Sally Rooney for sure comes to mind as like a popular writer who, like, I wouldn't say she's alternative fiction. She's like super popular, super in famous. A very, you know, mainstream sense, but also like she's a published author by like regular publishing companies. Mm-hmm. But her style of writing is like kind of similar to what you'd see on Tumblr, what you would see on Substack or something like that. So I think that is kind of interesting. Like, it's almost like the, what's the phrase? It's like art follows life, or life follows art.
Life imitates art.
There we go. That's the one. What would I do without you? But back to alternative literature, it tends to be autofiction. So autobiographical fiction. And me personally, that's one of my favorite genres for sure. Or even just like a blog post. Mm-hmm. And Maya, I know you're a blog post fan as well.
Yes, I love to blog post. I love to read blog posts. I think for me, I have a little blog on Substack, mm-hmm. and it's taken me.
Shout it out. Do it.
So if you want to give it a read, just type on Substack, Love Letters by Maya, and I'll pop up.
Okay.
Only if you want to, no pressure.
No pressure.
But it took me, like, I've been, like, toying with the idea of having a blog for so long, and, like, my mom, shout out to her, was always like, I love, like, the way you write. Like, you should have, like, a little blog. And I was like, no, I don't want people to, like, read what I write.
No, mom.
But, no, mom, stop. But I'll say, like, I feel like Substack, I can speak mainly on Substack, but I feel like the process of it feels very, like, real. Like, I feel like I don't have to, like, really, like, overanalyze? Yeah, overanalyze myself, like, really at all. Like, I just kind of, like, brain dump the writing. And because that's the type of writing that I like to read
yeah,
also.
Yeah, me too.
Because I feel like sometimes with published books, obviously because it's a published book, it feels...
You're, like, so separate from it.
Yeah, it feels very, like, we wrote this to appease, like, a publisher.
Yeah,
but when I go look at blogs, zines, like, all these kind of things, it feels like this was just someone's, like, mind dump. Mm-hmm. And it feels more real, I feel like.
Yeah, no, totally. I was thinking about that in terms of Substack as, like, while it is kind of an echo chamber of, like, quite similar-ish styles of writing, or at least for me, like, the things I look at, there is obviously a lot of room for to, like, see what you enjoy. It is social media at the end of the day, but like, it is a bit of an echo chamber, but it's also, like, one of the only online spaces, or, like, not even online spaces, but just, like, literary spaces that I can think of where it's, like, really, like, about the audience and the author, like, having so much of a discourse. Like, for example, you can take a quote out of, like, a piece and repost it as if it's, like, a tweet, essentially. Mm-hmm. But it's so interesting. Like, it's literally social media, but just all revolved around, like, literature. Mm-hmm. And I love the length that the, oh, hey, Jay. I love the length that the essays tend to be. I think it's, like, the perfect length for me, because it's, like, you know, a tweet's a little too short, but also, like, sometimes I just need, like, a 5-10 minute short story, and I love that that is kind of what's encouraged. So yeah, do you have any recommendations for blogs before we get into kind of the bulk of our...
I do. Let me open up my Substack app.
Yeah, please do.
I love Cafe Hysteria, which kind of talks about, like, art, culture, and just being a girl, like... Like, she kind of just talks about, like, her life as a girl, like, going through, like, 2014 Tumblr and all these kind of stuff. Nice. And, like, how
once
that's,
again,
like...
Tumblr. Once again, always back,
like,
to
literally
it.
Always back to Tumblr. All roads lead back to back to Tumblr. And just, she kind of just talks about, like, how that's impacted her. I think now she's in her, like, 20s or something. Very interesting read. Love Internet Princess.
Mm, of course.
Evil Female.
Mm-hmm. We'll actually, as a spoiler alert, be reading an essay by the poster of Evil Female in a second here. But yeah, I wanted to shout out some as well. So to reiterate, Internet Princess, of course, Rain Fisher Kwan.
We love you.
Has made such a mark on me personally, and, like, my Canadian legend and UBC legend.
Yep, shout out.
She did drop out, but all love.
Still a baddie.
Like, yeah, still a baddie. And, like, she moved to New York, so, like, you know, to pursue her literary dreams.
Yeah. So. She's so cool.
Yeah, she's awesome. Not the fan club. And then Evil Female, of course, Charlie Squire, super good. One of my favorite authors right now, honestly. And I believe she just published, like self-published, like a physical book.
Yeah.
So take a look at that, too. I Will Do Whatever I Want by Mackenzie Thomas, who actually is one of Rayne Fisher Kwan's friends in real life. So that's kind of fun. I feel like I've like parasocially joined this like
bestie friend group. Posts.
I'm like, yeah, me too. But she is really awesome, and she is really great at like that super blunt, honest humor.
Yeah.
And I was reading her notes from April. It's just like a summary of like little snippets of her life, like little anecdotes. It's so funny, and it's so good. And it had me kind of thinking about like the role that humor plays in this kind of like very accessible and very like culturally specific. I don't want to keep calling it literature, but writing, I guess.
Yeah.
Because this is like a form of art that is more casual than like a fully published novel. And so like it's so fun that you can have these little anecdotes. It's like literally a three line, like just like crazy thing that happened to her.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyways, I love the future of humor. I love the future of writing. On a side note, David Sedaris is in town today. Did you know this,
what?
Mickey?
Wait, where can I find him? Wait, yeah, what?
No, he's doing a like reading of his work.
Are you kidding
like,
me?
Like as we speak.
Wait, which read? Which book?
I don't know.
Mickey is but the biggest fan.
I'm a huge David Sedaris fan.
Yeah, no, he's like probably doing his thing as we speak.
Oh my gosh! No, I've listened to some of his audiobooks like multiple times because they're just so funny. Like they're just like short.
Oh my god, he lives in England.
Life.
That's crazy.
Oh my god!
It is at the Queen Elizabeth Theater.
What time?
Maybe we'll
pull up. I think my mom saw him once in Iowa City.
What?
Yes.
Yeah. Iowa City.
No, my whole family loves David Sedaris. He's awesome.
But yeah, and the Googled thing on here, how long is a David Sedaris show? Approximately 90 minutes with no intermission. Who is like asking
so funny
that?
Though also because in like a lot of his like little stories and anecdotes he like mentions little things from his shows and like from his tours, so it's like you could literally make it into his book.
No, you super could.
Okay, sorry, I just no, David please. Sedaris, my ears perked up.
No, does David Sedaris have a lisp? Is also like top Google. That's so
chill.
Sad.
That's
why
so
are they
funny.
Policing my man? Anyways, wow, sorry for the brief detour there. But yeah, Internet Princess, Evil Female, I Will Do Whatever I Want, Mackenzie Thomas is great. Mental Health, HELLTH by P.E. Moskowitz is also really, really good. They just did an essay called Art Is Now Porn, talking about the Challengers film that I thought was like a really kind of interesting take on it. But I also wanted to do a reverse shout out for another publication called The Free Press, which I recently subscribed to after reading one really good segment from it. And I was just like, oh, you know, I'll subscribe, keep track of this, come back to it later. And it was like truly disappointing. Like, I don't have another word for it. Like, it's truly disappointing because they market themselves as this like very like quintessential alternative literature, and it is like technically a news publication, but they're like, we're getting like stuff you've never heard of, and like we're interviewing people that like, you know, like you want to hear about this, and like the pressing issues, like a different look at the pressing issues of our time. And it's just like truly reproducing the dominant discourse about stuff like to the utmost.
Yeah,
like it's literally like if you just like watched CNN and then like wrote it down with like a couple more quips in there and like maybe use some more brackets and like, you know, do a funny like offside. But it's like you can like, even though your writing is like maybe more casual or like hashtag relatable, if you're just saying the exact same things that you would get from like mainstream media news, you're actually not doing what you think you're doing. And I just wanted to kind of acknowledge that.
Anti-shout out.
Yeah.
D-shout out.
Because like it made me think about how it's like, I think that something like alternative literature, while like, yes, like I said before, it's not genre specific or anything like that, but it is supposed to be something that is to some extent like avant-garde or at least interesting or having like interesting takes on stuff. Like it is kind of more of an artistic, I want to say.
Oh, yeah.
Or at least like less watered down kind of form of writing. So then when you're like posing as a publication that is like true to the spirit of alternative literature and you're like really, really, really super not, like just by throwing in a couple funny jokes into the writing and like trying to make it relatable, that's not actually what the whole point of it is. That's not what it's about.
Yeah.
So yeah, sorry. Also, I listened to their podcast. They have a podcast with the Free Press called Honestly, and they had David Sedaris go on and like read one of his pieces on it, which is why I was listening to it. And it was a 13-minute long episode. 7 of those minutes was like the last 7 minutes was David Sedaris reading his short story, and the first minutes of the podcast were all ads, like genuinely like just ads, nothing else. And I was like, no way you're calling this alternative literature.
I will not be tuning in.
But anyways, we're gonna do a quick little 1-minute ad break, and then coming back I'll be OMG reading out loud Objectifying Expression on Being Photographed and Mark Rothko by Charlie Squire, which is a March 20, 2024 blog post on Substack.
Yes.
So please stay tuned for that. And then me and Maya are going to be bantering about that in a second here. Yay.
Welcome, neighbor, to our gayborhood. In Our Gayborhood is a journey through the communities of BC, meeting our neighbors who work towards a world where everyone can be proud of who they are. In our first season, get to know the Tushlajibitikwa advocates, educators, and students who help our schools grow into spaces where everyone can belong. Just like our neighborhoods, each episode is filled with the spirit of care, the energy of activism, and the warmth of community. Join us in Our Gayborhood, premiering June 14th at the Queer Arts Festival.
Launched in December 2023, Connect Afrobeats is an innovative online platform with a dedicated mission to foster a vibrant community for Afrobeats and Afro-inspired talents across the entire value chain. Join Connect Afrobeats today to connect with verified global Afrobeats talents, collaborate with fellow artists, and engage in meaningful discussions. Whether you're an artist, writer, talent manager, road manager, A&R, promoter, distributor, or publisher, this is your platform to network, find talents, form partnerships, and teams. Connect Afrobeats is gearing up to launch music camps in summer of 2024. So what are you waiting for? Amplify your presence in the vibrant world of Afrobeats and sign up now.
All right, welcome back. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Arts Report. My name is Serena, and I have Maya and Mickey in the studio.
Hey, again.
Okay, so now I'm going to be reading Objectifying Expression by Charlie Squire, and I'm going to kind of fly through it, and me and Maya are going to chat about it. And this is just an essay I really enjoyed. Like, I think I wanted to bring it on this show because we are talking about art, obviously. We are talking about intersectionality. We're talking about maybe the accessibility of media as well, which is something that I think Substack is like really great for. It can connect you with all sorts of ideas that you've never had that other people are having. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like a very, I don't want to just keep saying accessibility over and over, but like.
But it is.
It's such a nice space.
Yeah.
And this essay I really enjoyed, and it definitely was a good way to think about stuff. I really appreciate her voice and the narrative that this essay has. So anyways, without further freaking ado, this is Objectifying Expression by Charlie Squire. I was a person in front of a painting until I was an image. My hearing isn't the best. In my left ear, it's basically shot, but what's left of it seems to be particularly sensitive to the clicks of camera shutters. It's not hard to hear the difference between a film camera and a digital camera and the camera on a phone, where the shutter only sounds if the phone is Japanese or the owner is a baby boomer afflicted by their generational inability to set a cell phone to vibrate. Being photographed is something you can feel. It was something I felt inside the art museum, my being flattened into an unwitting actor in someone else's tableau, an image created for purposes beyond my knowledge. The first time I had my photograph taken, I asked if they could delete the pictures, unnecessarily justifying my request with the explanation that I just wanted to look at paintings and not serve as fodder for someone's social media profile or Squarespace portfolio. One woman excitedly tapped my shoulder to show me the pictures of me she had taken, sitting on a wobbly folding chair in front of a painting by Mark Rothko. All the photographs were of Mark Rothko paintings because we were attending a Mark Rothko retrospective. And yet, despite walking through a dozen rooms filled with massive canvases, it was not a painting which captured the focus of the large majority of patrons. Instead, their attention laid mostly in photographing the paintings. A patron would stand a few feet behind a painting, only seeing the canvas through the light of their phone screen, moving on to the next as soon as a suitable photograph had landed in their camera roll, always ensuring their sight is never raw, always digitally mediated. Among the young, thin, beautiful patrons with bad tattoos and garishly large belt buckles, an identical aversion towards art viewing in favor of image making was apparent, poorly concealed behind the mechanical aesthetics of the film camera, equally cynical in its desire to turn art and audiences into a collection of objects populating a shareable image. Having my photograph often incites me to cry. My friend Ryan has large, beautiful hair. We have a tendency to sit in comfortable silence together, and we have boys' names despite not being boys. We met in the woods of upstate New York, where so many of my strange and fine friendships began. We met in the winter, and we would walk through the pine trees, looking for deer bones and moss and jagged beams of sunlight on the snow. We would make photographs in Ryan's basement, usually of me, heavily costumed in vintage polyester while the Kinks played on a Bluetooth speaker. We briefly dabbled and failed at furniture making. I like these photographs, pieces of make-believe and performance, where my emotions sit sturdy and lacquered and complicated like the shaker furniture that fills all the Hudson antique stores. I like images, collections of signs and signifiers bound inside frames, including things, excluding things, pictures or objects of intention, like paintings and text messages. I like photographs which depict contrived narratives. Cameras make something impossibly permanent, so upon viewing photographs we become so uncomfortably conscious of the impermanence of our beings. The heavily staged photograph reminds us that all photographs, all memories, are staged in some way or another, that we're all posing ourselves for lenses and frames, real and imagined. I like abstract paintings because they evoke the same anxiety, forcing us to humble ourselves to environmental affect. Portrait photography and abstract expressionism both require creators and audiences alike to subsume themselves to the process of deeply feeling, eliciting emotions that cannot be edited into frames with finite edges. The consciousness of being looked at is perhaps why women dominate both genres. Cindy Sherman, Nadia Lee Cohen, Helen Frankenthaler, and Elaine de Kooning are all masters of forcing viewers into emotional submission through the manipulation of nostalgia, melancholy, and mood. And while we live among many, many images, we do not live inside images. We live inside our lives and our perspectives, even though there is a palpable desire to shove everything into a frame, a square, a photograph. Creating art is empowering because it is a process so unlike living. It would be so easy if all our feelings and experiences were nameable and photographable and capturable and frameable and shareable. You can't photograph a Mark Rothko painting. You can point a camera at a Rothko and produce an image, but that image is not a painting. It's an image of a painting. If you want to get anything from a Rothko painting, you must work for it. All of the melancholy and magic of his work must be mined by the viewer. These paintings demand the use of wobbly fold-out chairs tragically underutilized at museums. The paintings are funny, sad. At its core, abstract expressionism, despite its association with pretension and black turtlenecks and natural wines, is about letting go of your ego. You must forget yourself and your opinions and your experiences. You must be empty to make space for the painting to move inside you. The painting must move through you. When you spend enough time with one of these paintings, you'll notice how they buzz and hum, not like telephone wires, but like insects, moving, undulating, somehow producing noise and a faint tingling sensation on the skin. Some colors, even some whole paintings, blend together, while others remain impossibly separated and irreconcilable. The paintings, with their base colors and base forms, evoke the most base concepts of life, weather, water, wounds, yet each painting is inlaid with its own unique nuance. It's an uncomfortable process, and a public one, which may explain why so many people are unwilling to shrink themselves in the presence of other spectators. Rothko's work requires a degrading level of vulnerability. Critics of abstract expressionism are perhaps most averse to the necessary penetrability and therefore femininity required to get it. I sat in front of these paintings for 10, 15, 20 minutes each. There's no way to really see them all in a day. The exhibition was at the Louis Vuitton Foundation, a grossly corporate venue whose probable purpose as a tax write-off generator with an influencer-friendly logo makes it the ideal factory for turning people and paintings into content. I don't particularly care about museum patrons taking a discreet photograph or two, especially of representational art which depicts something strange or interesting or ugly or true. These personal photographs creating a digital archive for future artistic reference. But we weren't looking at pictures of things, we were looking at objects, objects whose magic depth cannot be captured, regardless of the resolution of the photo. I'd hear another camera click, look behind me, and find the barrel of a Nikon lens pointed straight at my head. If I moved away from the painting, the photographer would inevitably give me a disappointed scowl and move on, only interested in creating the image of a person I was unwillingly cast in their composition. I was upset, almost to the point of rage, nearly to the point of standing on top of my borrowed folding chair and yelling. These paintings can't be captured by your iPhone camera, or your professional SLR, or your parents' old Olympus rangefinder. They can't be captured by anything, really. At their best, they'll capture you. But that can only happen when you sit in front of them, which you have the opportunity to do right now, but you're not, because you're only focused on taking pictures of unphotographable paintings for what reason? To prove you were here? To produce some sort of digital footprint? To inspire jealousy in your friends? To affirm to yourself that you are cultured, educated, well-read, because you lack security in your sense of self? Because if it's a sense of self you're lacking, you're in the presence of an immersive, pious experience that can help you work through some of those feelings, if you only put down the lens. And please, stop taking pictures of me. The more upset I became, the more I felt that my sensitivity towards the paintings was the same sensitivity I held when I was the subject of the photographs. The uncomfortable, complex, and often difficult intimacy of the paintings characterizes their timeless humanity. The photograph of these paintings is just a collection of symbols, of words and quotes, painting, Paris, culture, art, color, emotion, Rothko, museum, participation. When I am photographed, I too become a collection of symbols, a condition that is a source of voice and power when I decide on the symbols, and an act of domination when it is imposed on me. The difficult, illogical, intimate parts of myself that are knowable only through the vulnerable, frightening process of intimacy are flattened and compressed into a frame. If the public around me is only capable of forming their own identity through signifiers, unwilling to engage with the complexity of the art they choose and pay to be around, how will they conceptualize others? What lies behind identities constructed out of images? What happens when there's no patience, no desire to understand what lies within the frame, much less beyond it? I cried at the Mark Rothko exhibition, twice. The first cry began because I could not escape the camera shutters and the process of objectification that they incite. The second cry began because, despite all my frustrations with my fellow patrons, I fell inside of the painting in front of me, immersed, uncertain, and humbled. Okay, we're done.
That was awesome, Serena.
Thank you. So yeah, any thoughts on that?
I really loved that was my first time actually like mm-hmm. hearing the piece. So it was super awesome to hear that. I really loved the part where talking about how in both writing and painting, femininity seems to be like a center of it, because mm-hmm. I feel like that's so interesting, because I feel like, what's the quote where to be a woman is to perform?
Yeah.
Is that the quote?
I think it's Sylvia Plath, isn't
okay,
it?
So I'm pretty sure. I saw it on Tumblr.
Saw it on Tumblr.
Because I do definitely, like, I feel like the content that I read in fiction, in nonfiction, in like on Substack, is mainly by female authors, because mm-hmm. I feel like I personally can relate more to it,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like I'm not big on paintings. I don't really know a lot about like art like that, but I can only imagine like what it's like to see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And it did also make me think, like, she has one of the photos that somebody took of her, like, as one of the photos included in the essay. And it's, like, I definitely see all those photos all the time on, like, Pinterest or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's always, like, beautiful women in front of paintings. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, oh, yeah, total objectification. Like, mm-hmm. you are reduced into as much of, like, a piece as the actual painting that's serving as the background. Just super interesting to think about. But I love her style of writing. I think it's very direct.
It's so beautiful.
It has an interesting cadence, which does kind of make it difficult to read out loud, but I appreciate the cadence when I'm reading it.
Yeah, I feel like that's something that I do love about Substack and about those kind of like works, is just the way people write. I love when people write the way that they talk. I don't know, like something that I really try to do is whenever I take the bus somewhere, like I don't try to be on my phone, like on Instagram or whatever. Like I try to like read like a new blog post or like discover new authors. And the authors that like always stick out to me are the ones that write the way they talk and are very blunt. And I feel like the work that I've read on Substack has like genuinely expanded the way that I like see things in culture and society in the world. Like even though sometimes it's just like someone talking about like a book recommendation or like a silly thing that they did.
Yeah.
Like the I will do what
I
want.
I will do whatever I want.
I will do whatever
the
I want.
The notes on April.
Is notes that on, I yeah, think yeah, it's yeah. I think it was you showed me one that it was one of the posts was talking about bring back the dance floor
makeout. Dance floor makeout. That's what bring it was. You're
and,
so right.
And that one, like, it made me laugh so much. But I was also like, yes, like, I feel like
they're very current. It's like, it's, yes. I enjoy reading stuff that's kind of like a classic or like written in an older time. Mm-hmm. But it's also really interesting to read something that's like so extremely current. Not current as in like, you know, this decade or this like cultural period of time.
Yesterday.
But like literally like talking about the trends that we're seeing right now and like intellectualizing those and like literally like on Substack you can tag little like videos and stuff. So like often authors will be like, this thing that I saw that like made me think about the fragility of life and and go into this like really deep thing. And then you could just like watch the little Instagram video and it's just like a video of a dog like freaking out.
Yeah.
That's like a direct, like that's what I'm talking about. But it's such a like interesting way to bring authorship into a new generation. And I don't mean like a new generation,
but
like we are very aware that we have all this information at our fingertips, and it's like so interesting to see that not be reduced to like, on one side you have social media and whatever that is like possibly less intellectual than like you know other forms of writing. It's like fun to find a middle ground where it's like, okay, this is a serious piece. This is someone who their career is to write, and they're also tagging this little video for you to watch.
Yeah, I think it's so, I think it's like so awesome and so, it's just so interesting to see like these pieces that are genuinely like, how did you think of this? Like, this is so beautiful to be reading on my like 10 minute ride on the bus. But they're still, like, not taking themselves, like, too seriously.
Yeah.
I think it's, and like you were saying with Substack, I feel like it's kind of, like, the publishing world, I feel like, is very hard to get into. Like, you see a lot of authors who
even
take,
at, like, a alternative, quote-unquote, literature magazine, like, just to get published
it's
in general
so,
is difficult.
So difficult.
Yeah.
And especially for, like, people who often don't have access to these resources or whose voices aren't getting that media attention. I feel like these
can like tackle maybe more difficult subjects that other like publications don't want to broach.
And I feel like Substack, it's like it's you can just open, you can download the app, start your own blog and just write, and then people will come to you.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's such an organic thing. Yeah. I feel like
it's super interesting to like follow an author too in in a different way than just like, oh no, like I bought the new novel.
Yeah.
But it's like I can like follow them on social media and I follow their Substack, and it's like every day that they post something new, like I'm there, and it's like, I don't know, it's such a more engaging way to be with the material. Like for example, Charlie Squire has 10,000 Substack followers, and that's just like her own blog post essentially. All I'm saying is, like, Substack is totally bringing back the blog post in a new and improved way, and I love it. And I just wanted to mention one thing that is typically said about zines, which is that they're important social, cultural, and visual documentation of the periods in which they were made. But I think that that also tracks for something like Substack, which is, like, obviously a much more specific example. But, like, it's such a good documentation of, like, literally the very niche and, like, hyper-specific period that they're coming out of. And I think it's so fun that we have access to this.
I read a super good, I don't know what blog post it was on. I'm so sorry. That's okay. It's slipping my mind. But on the like Stanley Cup, like mass buying. And it was so...
Just send that to me.
I will. And then people like add it to like the like notes on this episode. But I forget who it was by. But it was so interesting how they connected class, race, gender, and buying a Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
It was so like actually like so, because I would have never thought of that. But in reading it, I was like, oof, you've blown my mind. And like you were saying about following authors,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't feel like a parasocial relationship the way that following like a singer does or whatever,
because
it feels like
it's about their work, like truly. Yeah,
it's not like oh my god, I'm obsessed with you as a person. It's like I feel like your work just speaks to me.
Yeah,
like it feels more intimate but also very separate.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. No, totally.
That's what I mean about it being like a really nice middle ground,
mm-hmm.
where it's kind of giving some,
we love Substack.
We love Substack. And I just wanted to end off the episode just kind of like doing a little deep dive on my favorite quote from the essay I just read, which was the part where she says, creating art is empowering because it is a process so unlike living. It would be so easy if all our feelings and experiences were nameable and photographable and capturable and frameable and shareable. Because I think that's such like a succinct
mm-hmm.
way, or like, yeah, a succinct like label to give a really indescribable aspect of the human condition. And like me personally, I take so many photos all the time.
We were talking about this.
So many photos.
We were talking about this the other day, how we have literally multiple photos of the same thing, but just like
different angles.
People taking it, all this kind of stuff. And I feel like it's so like, oh, I want to like be in the moment. But also looking back on that photo, looking back on the photos, I remember the way I was feeling. I remember where I was, the people I was with.
But it's also, it's like so true. And I find it very interesting to like have that personal perspective and then mm-hmm. to read something that's like, I wouldn't say it's like anti-photo taking, but it's definitely not taking like a positive or like praising approach to it. But that like being able to kind of put to words the desire to take photos because mm-hmm. you want to condense all of your like life into something that's like art, right? Because it's like art is like, you know, it's this big and it's like this was placed here and the layout was strategic. And when you're taking a photo, more often than not, even if it's like, you know, a candid or whatever, more mm-hmm. often than not, you're doing something to it.
Yeah.
Like in some way you're altering that. You take it from this like slight angle, or maybe you turn down the brightness so that like the sun shows up better, or whatever it is. Like in some way in taking that photo, it's not a completely authentic like capturing of that moment. And even though we can be like, yeah, capturing the moment, like you are changing it and you are in hindsight kind of like making your memories into something that they're not totally. And like, I don't know, just thinking about that idea of like at some point in time before really phones or like digital cameras mm-hmm. where you could just take an unlimited amount of photos, just like da 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 da. Like before that, we just had to rely on our memory for our moments. Like
literally,
you just had that. And like, I feel like so much of my memory is based off of the photos I have and like through going through my camera roll relatively often and being like, oh yeah, I remember this. But it's like, how much do I remember it and how much am I remembering it in the way that like I took that photo and like, what am I cutting out and what am I including? And yeah, just that idea of like, we're trying to make our lives into art. Like it's
mm-hmm.
just completely romanticism. I don't mean romanticism like the genre. I mean like romanticizing your life.
Romanticizing your life, yeah.
But yeah, like it would be so easy if everything was nameable and capturable, mm-hmm. but it's not.
And that's also kind of...
But that's poetic and beautiful.
It's kind of like so awesome because like we're all just people going through life for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And
But I feel like that is the human tendency to like mm-hmm. make art... Or, like, write a blog post on Substack. Like, mm-hmm. all of those ones that are super off the cuff that were like, wow, like, it's just this girl telling us about, like, this funny thing she did the other day.
Yeah.
But it's like, we read that as literature and as art. And mm-hmm. it really is just someone like picking and choosing select moments from their yeah. life to jot down. And like, I do enjoy it. I'm not saying anything mm-hmm. negative about it, but it is really interesting that we enjoy that as like a media to consume, when it's really just like someone telling us back specific things yeah. from their life. I don't know. Mm-hmm. We definitely have a tendency to like condense
yeah.
our lives into something that can be shared with others, and not shared like with others like the way you share your life with others, but like, yeah, but like, hey, this thing, this story, my anecdote.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all the things we're like including and not including, especially in something like Substack, which is like pretty short usually.
Yeah. And what was I gonna say? No,
it's okay. I left you speechless.
Yeah,
truly.
You're just so talented. And we're making crazy eye contact.
We are making, that should be said.
This entire episode, Serena and I have been locking eyes. We're locked in.
No, truly.
I was going to say, I feel like we have a tendency to also want to peer into other people's, uh-huh. like, what they're thinking, what they're doing, like, we just want like one foot in just to like see what other people are doing to make ourselves feel better, to make just, I feel like when
the culture of comparison.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's very interesting because I feel like what you're saying about like romanticizing your life, like has positives and it has also a lot of drawbacks.
Yeah.
And I feel like, yeah, like you're saying, like how Substack kind of has, it's a nice like center of media, I mm-hmm. feel like romanticizing your life also, we kind of need to find a center, I feel like, in the mm-hmm. coming years, because I feel like some people take it too far, personally.
You're taking it too seriously. At the end of the day, it's just Substack.
At the end of the day, it's just Substack.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe truly. I should re-download Tumblr.
Yeah, maybe that's the key takeaway from this episode.
Yeah, the key takeaway is everyone should get on the app store. And hit
download a Tumblr. Bunch of apps right now.
Download
or
Substack.
Else.
Tumblr,
Twitter,
X, actually.
Oh, my bad. Wattpad.
But I don't call it X. I call it Twitter.
Wattpad.
Oh, hello. Wattpad, yes.
The major one.
The major one, YN.
No, literally. And with that said.
With that said,
that just about does it for us.
Yes.
So thank you so much for listening to the Arts Report on CITR 101.9 FM. We have another episode, not next Wednesday, but the one after that.
Woo.
So please tune in. If you like, hit us up on the Instagram and give us some more Substack recommendations.
Yes.
Because I am always,
I'm always looking
in the market. So thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
What is the 411? What is the 411? What is the 411? You acting up and then you say none. What is the 411? What is the 411? What is the 411? You act this weird and then you say none.
Yeah. She want the money pronto. Baby move Bali like Hong Kong. Baby move Bali with caution. Put your number on my cellular. But the lady want my coma. Why you acting now when I call you? Baby don't want no commitment. I'ma give you love like no hold on, yeah. Taking trippy to Coco D. Baby mama won't come for me. All the lady won't come for me. Loving you, baby girl, be sugary, yeah, yeah. What is the 41111? I'ma call you like 911. Coming to my condo, yeah, yeah. Baby kiss you till the morning comes.
What is the 411? What is the 411? What is the 411? You're acting up and then you say none. What is the 411? What is the 411? What is the 411? You act this weird and then you say none.
Make noise, kiss a friend, make a mess, cry. was only a little bit at first, then a little bit more, and a little bit more. What was in the beginning, only tiny and insignificant, grew to almost half. Rate accelerated rapidly, escalating beyond control. Warnings were inaudible before the loudspeakers of more.
CITR operates and broadcast, and where many of you are listening to the program from, is the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people.
Hello and welcome to That Song from That Movie. I'm Movie Maverick Mike.
And I'm Logan the Extra. You're listening to us on 101.9 CITR FM. Today we'll be talking about Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, featuring the songs I Can't Break Away by Big Pig and Play